The next speaker we have lined up for you is a hopefully recovered Nathan Ward. And Nathan will be talking to us about IPv6 in New Zealand. Anyone got a DVI Mac video adapter handy? Yep, go on, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, apparently this is my jersey that I left in Palmerston North. And my iPhone. Cheers, Simon. Yeah. Oh. All right, so I never actually told Neil really what I was talking about, and he decided I was talking about IPv6 in New Zealand. Not really. But I told him I would do something about IPv6. So I'm going to do something about IPv6. I'm Nathan Ward. I have a little network consulting company called BrainTrust, and so on and so on. So I'm going to do a whole bunch of different stuff. So first off, I'll start off with V6 Multicast. So people saw this these slides yesterday. So I think last year we had some talks about V4 Multicast. So we've got a rough idea of how multicast generally works, so I'm going to assume that everyone knows. Okay, so it's almost the same as V4 multicast. Instead of IGMP, you have MLD, which runs over ICMP. You use PIM to build a sort of multicast distribution tree within your network. There's no inter-domain weird protocols. With IPv4 multicast, we have this crazy thing called MSDP. We don't have any of that with V6, and I'll explain why. You still have a multicast routing table. The multicast routing table stores unicast addresses, so when you know the source of a particular stream, you send a join towards it based on your multicast routing table. So it stores unicast addresses, not multicast addresses. And you use multicast BGP to build it. So multicast BGP is just another address family. So you have address family IPv4, address family IPv6, address family IPv4 multicast, IPv6 multicast, and so on. I'm only going to talk about any source multicast. I'm not going to talk about source specific multicast because I haven't played with it yet. I might talk about it next year, we'll see. So groups of single addresses. This is a IPv6 multicast group. This is a real one, and I've had it working into here before, but it doesn't seem to work now. I'm not really sure why, so I've got to go and play with that. So with any source multicast, anyone can send data to that group, not just the source that you're expecting it to be coming from. So it's not that great for doing content provider sort of streaming stuff. You want to use source-specific multicast. So when I play with that, we'll talk about that next year. You have a rendezvous router, which is sits sort of quite close to the source. The source basically sends their data to the rendezvous router, and that sort of spreads it out initially and helps do the initial sort of setup of sending the multicast into the network. And PIM sort of figures out which rendezvous point is looking after which groups and so on and so on. So, very, very rough description of sort of process of it working. We've got a new source that's sending data into the network to this multicast group, and its source address is this. So it sends it out to its local Ethernet, keeps sending it. The local designated multicast router encapsulates it in a tunnel and sends it off to the RPIC, the rendezvous router. The rendezvous router then says, there's actually no one who wants to listen to this now, so stop sending me all this data, send it back to me when I tell you later when someone's actually listening. So then we have a listener. Listener comes along and says, you send an MLD join to your local Ethernet sort of segment. Your multicast designated router then sends a PIM join up the tree towards wherever the rendezvous point is for that group. So it knows the rendezvous point's unicast address, and it looks in the multicast table for that unicast address, sees which way the routing for that goes, and sends the PIM join in that direction. So then it goes up the tree to the rendezvous point. Then the rendezvous point gets it and says, oh, there's actually someone who wants this group now. So it then starts sending PIM joins back towards the source. Now, it knows the source because it was sending it data before encapsulated. So it knows the source IPv6 address. Okay? PIM joins go back up to that that source router. That source router then starts sending the V6 multicast stuff down to the rendezvous point. Rendezvous point sends it on, and away you go. Then what happens is once your sort of edge multicast router, the one right down by you, knows the source IPv6 address of the data that's coming through, it sends PIM joins in that direction, so to sort of cut the rendezvous point out, so it's not sort of tromboning through that rendezvous point anymore. So it'll go direct over the best multicast path through there. So a little picture of this working. So we've got a couple of listeners. They're not listening now, but they will be in a minute when there's arrows on it, and there's a source. So the source is the source starts sending multicast data to the network. This is this little line here is a switch. So it starts spamming stuff down here. This router is a designated multicast router for this network, and so it then it encapsulates the data and sends it off to this rendezvous point. Rendezvous point then says, "Oh, actually, no one's listening, so stop sending it to me for now." So what happens then is this listener decides to join the group, sends those PIM joins towards the rendezvous point. Rendezvous point says, "Oh, actually, someone's listening now." Starts joining the group, and then the data sort of flows in this direction. Now, obviously, the data flowing all the way around this rendezvous point is kind of a long way around, right? And it really should go over this path here. So what happens once that now is this router knows the source address. It knows the unicast address of this host here. So it can say, right, what's the best route to this host? It's over this interface. So it then sends a PIM join over this interface, so that the packets will come down that way. So that comes like that. So he's done his join, and away he goes. So then this listener's actually getting the packets twice now. And then he sends a PIM prune to the rendezvous point, so that he ends up only getting one stream. Okay, so it ends up being this sort of when you first sort of start listening, if there's a bit of not optimal routing, whatever. But then it sorts itself out pretty quickly. And then that guy decides to listen in as well, and the beauty of multicast does its thing. Now, I was talking about how IPv4 we have MSDP to discover multicast groups and which rendezvous point is responsible for which multicast group. With IPv6 we have a thing called embedded RP. Now, embedded RP is where we take a /64, and so Beatty will complain about wasting more addresses. So we take an entire /64, use no addresses in it, and we say the rendezvous point address is that /64. And then we put the rendezvous point address into this part of the multicast group. So if we've got a multicast group of this, so we've got, this says embedded RP, global scope, a few other things, and then it says, this is the RP address here, and then we've got a /96 of group numbers available, so we know the RP address is there. All right. So what I was talking about before was within a domain, so using PIM within a single AS, inter-domain any source multicast is not that much different. We've got a listener here. The listener says they want to listen to group a specific group, so they look inside the embedded RP address, find out the rendezvous point, and send PIM joins up towards their best route to reach that rendezvous point. This router then sends a PIM join to him, and the traffic does the trombone thing. Then it optimizes, just like within a single domain, it optimizes, and then someone else decides to listen in as well. There was someone a few years ago promoting V4 multicast quite hard. And it would have prevented 9/11 and the whole whatever it was that he was saying. I'm not going to make any such claims, but I will say it's very, very easy to turn on as you're rolling out IPv6. It's literally you type IPv6 PIM or IPv6 PIM enable or something like that on each interface where you type IPv6 address, and you're done. And once you've done that, you can now transit IPv6 multicast stuff. So it's very easy. So I think it'd be nice if we could start thinking about doing this as we're rolling out V6 and do it at the same time. So to sort of encourage that, I'm going to start spamming a bunch of multicast stuff onto the Orkin Peering Exchange, a bunch of radio streams, that sort of stuff. So if people want to start playing around with it and seeing if it worked across their network, that sort of thing, there's actual content there that people can tune into. Okay, so I'll announce that on a list somewhere at some point, and give some instructions on how to connect to it and that sort of thing. And hopefully later on today I'll get the multicast working into here with a few radio streams so people can use it on their machine. So VLC can use it, Windows Media can use it, QuickTime can use it, whatever. Okay. So that's multicast stuff. Anyone got any abuse for me for that? No? We're good. That's surprisingly low abuse. Okay. Next thing I'm going to talk about is this is a slide they gave at the APNIC conference in Christchurch in August, something like that. I was explaining this thing to a friend of mine, Rob, and then he was explaining it to someone else, and this was his very short way of talking about this stuff. So he said, "Welcome to your IPv6-enabled transport network, whether you like it or not." So, 3.64. They're both tunneling mechanisms. They're widely supported on a whole bunch of end hosts, Cisco routers, Apple routers, a whole bunch of different routers will do 6.4. In Vista, they're enabled by default. In XP, you have to tweak a knob and they both get enabled. Lots of people end up with V6 addresses and things like that. Anyone behind an IPv4 NAT with a Vista box will be running Teredo and they'll have a Teredo address. If you're not behind an IPv4 NAT, if you've got a public address, then you'll be doing 6.4 and you'll be on the V6 network. So, the question was asked yesterday, what is IPv6's killer app? So, a lot of people have said, it's just... Oh. I tried to charge my iPhone last night with my laptop charger. Has someone got a charger or something?
Yours.
Yeah, you can find, yeah. Oh, yeah, cool. All right. A lot of people have said we don't really have a killer app, that sort of thing, apart from greater address space. But it's still not really a killer app, but to me, I think peer-to-peer is going to be the big thing with IPv6. Right now, we can NAT people and all that sort of thing. And all that stops working is people running their own servers or people doing peer-to-peer stuff. So in terms of bits, bits over the wire, that sort of thing, peer-to-peer is really going to be the IPv6 killer app, I think. So I looked at this, and then I looked at some peer-to-peer clients, like a BitTorrent client. And so... there's a couple of clients that are out there that do V6. Providers have sort of avoided it as much as they can, or installed lock boxes to shape it down, or whatever. the clients that are out there now will do V6 pairs and exchange them over distributed hash tables or pair exchange or whatever. Although I hear that someone was telling me the other day that the Pirate Bay has just started doing handing out V6 pair addresses as well. So if you connect to them and then say, here is my V6 address, they'll hand it out to other people and you'll start doing V6 stuff if you're on a Pirate Bay thing, you know, downloading your Linux ISOs or whatever you're doing. So the two main clients that do V6, Azurus and NewTorrent, their DHT is not compatible with each other. Azure's client has had IPv6 support for about 18 months, maybe a little bit longer, ever since version 3, which apparently they now call Views. V6 is enabled by default. You have to go into advanced settings somewhere to disable it. Because it automatically updates itself, the V6 support is pretty widely deployed. Almost everyone's running the latest version almost straight away. If you're using sort of Teredo 64, it will only use 64. It won't use Teredo. Teredo has a restriction in Windows where it will only be used by applications if the application sets a specific socket option, and apparently Java can't do that, and it's a Java client, so it goes. It'll do native V6, obviously, and 64 and all that stuff just fine. NewTorrent is the other client. As of mid-August, it's had V6 support. V6 support's enabled by default again. On the early betas of it, it would enable V6 in XP. So XP's V6 is disabled by default. In the early betas, you'd install it, and as part of the install process, it would go do the NetSH interface IPv6 install command and turn V6 on. It does do Teredo on Windows boxes, which is quite interesting. So that means, you know, anyone behind a NAT who's running NewTorrent will end up doing V6 stuff. I looked at Azurus. When I did this work, Azurus was the only client out that had V6 support, or the only sort of mass deployed client that had V6 support. So what it is, I put three instances of Azurus on three different Linux boxes. One of the boxes had a Teredo address, one of the boxes had a 64 address, and one of the boxes had a V4 address. I didn't have any native trans at the time, so I didn't use it. The packets that I collected were the V4 addresses that I used had only been used for this. They hadn't been used for anything else in the past, as far as I knew. So this is the. I ran it for about a day, I think. Just turned Azurus on and said, "Okay, run your distributed hash tables thing. I'm going to count how many V4 pairs and V6 pairs and all that sort of thing." And this analysis is the distributed hash tables just sort of maintaining its state. So I wasn't doing any downloads or anything like this. So in terms of V4 stuff, I spoke to 26,000 different hosts. In terms of 64 stuff, I talked to 10,000 different hosts, and I talked to 3,500 Teredo hosts. So that's quite a lot, remote hosts that I was speaking to. This is the bidirectional one's really the important number, because that's the number of hosts that I was able to send data to, and then they replied, you know, sort of implying that there was bidirectional communication there. Then I've got this is stuff where I sent packets to them and they didn't reply, and then they sent a packet to me and I didn't reply for some reason. I'm not totally sure why. This one's an interesting one. With Teredo, the way it works is, in order to find a relay to send data to a specific host, it pings that host. And that ping reply, when it comes back, it uses that to find out which relay to use. Now, when I was trying to send messages back to hosts, I would send this ping, and then 974 different hosts didn't reply to the ping that I sent them. So I wasn't able to find a relay to send data through, so I wasn't able to talk to them. So there's sort of now a requirement in V6, if you want Teredo clients to be able to connect to you, to accept and respond to pings. And sort of a lot of security guys will go, oh, we have to block all the ICMP and all that, but sorry, it won't work anymore. So this is based on my 64 interface and my Teredo interface. This is number of hosts over my 64 interface, number of hosts over my Teredo interface. So then I looked at it the other way, and I looked at the remote host's IP address. So obviously V4 is the same. But this is the number of 6 to 4 hosts that I talked to, and this is the number of Toredo hosts that I talked to, and this is the number of native hosts that I talked to. So you can see there's a huge number of 6 to 4 in Toredo hosts compared to the native hosts. So in terms of, well, in August at least, in terms of V6 deployment worldwide, there's far, far more on 6 to 4 in Toredo than there is on native. I thought that was fairly interesting. The other thing that we see here is we see some Toredo. Now, Azure is running on Windows, we'll never be doing Toredo, so this must be Linux hosts. If I was only talking to Windows hosts, this number would be zero. With 6 to 4 is only used if we have a public IP address, a public IPv4 address. There's probably very few hosts in the world that have a public IPv4 address. Most of them are behind NAT. So if Azurus had Toredo support, this number will be much, much higher, and it will be much, much higher than this. So if we say, 5% of the hosts on the internet have a public address, then 95% of those hosts aren't running Azurus IPv6 like they would be. And if Azurus could do Toredo, then this number would be, 20 times that. Okay. I had a lot of packets coming in, and I was able to look at the headers and sort of establish a bit about the health of Toredo relays and 6 to 4 relays around the place. So I talked about the ping thing. Running a Toredo relay is good. You should do it. So what I did is I had all these packets coming in. I looked at the HLIM, which is the equivalent of the TTL in IPv6. So if the HLIM was higher than 64, I assumed that the initial HLIM was 128. If the HLIM was lower than 64, I assumed the initial HLIM was 64. Making some assumptions here, but it doesn't really matter on because of the scale. So, and what I was able to do from that is I was able to figure out the number of hops had been taken over the IPv6 cloud before it reached the relay, the Toredo or 6 to 4 relay, and was then encapsulated in V4 and sent to me. So I can see how well deployed Toredo and 6 to 4 relays are. This is a picture of it happening. So packet comes across here, native V6 packet comes across here, HLIM decrement, gets encapsulated in Toredo here and gets sent across a tunnel, and it doesn't decrement at all, or maybe it decrements one. So the IPv4 hops across there don't impact the packets. So this is a number of hosts, this is number of hops. So 6 to 4 relays are actually pretty well deployed. A huge number of hosts only did 3 or 4 IPv6 hops before they reached a 6 to 4 relay. And that's really, really good. That was a lot better than I was expecting. Now, 6 to 4 is only used by people who are outside NAT. So there's a lot of people who are behind NAT who are using Toredo. So, far, far more than 6 to 4. And this is interesting because that's what Toredo looks like. So most hosts go through 10 or 11 hops before they reach a Toredo relay. So they're going to, Finland or all sorts of different places over, probably 5 or 6 different tunnels to reach it. And the latency is just ridiculous and so on. So that's interesting. There's far, far more users on Toredo, yet the relays are far worse deployed. So, please run some Toredo relays. Good. Interesting stuff I noticed back when uTorrent was coming out with the V6 support was a lot of people were saying, on the sort of the user community, that sort of stuff, a lot of people were saying, no one's deployed IPv6. We won't use this thing, this Toredo thing, the ISP has to support it before we can use it and all this sort of stuff, which is just totally not true at all. And the funny thing was they were probably running uTorrent in the background, and it was probably doing Toredo IPv6 as they were writing this stuff saying that it was impossible. So the interesting thing there is there's a lot of users who are actively thinking they're not using it or not using IPv6 or whatever that they are, and it's just kind of happening in the background and just quietly doing its thing. So conclusions, Toredo relays are 6 to 4 relays are pretty well deployed. Toredo relays are terribly deployed, please deploy some. Lives will get easier, and so on and so on. The what ends up happening is if you don't have Twitter on 6-to-4 relays, and if you have a customer on your network that's on 6-to-4 and a customer on your network that's on Twitter, and they both want to talk to each other to, you know, send a part of a Linux ISO, that will go via a Twitter or 6-to-4 relay. You know, it'll go via a 6-to-4 relay probably in the RNF in Australia or something, and a Twitter relay probably, not in Redmond, but like say Finland somewhere or something crazy like that. So you end up burning a whole bunch of international bandwidth that you could have just sent through a Linux box. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I mean, you build a customer for, we don't do differentiated, whatever. Yeah.
Depends if you want to price yourself out of the market or not.
Yeah. So, I did this with uTorrent, now that uTorrent's come out with Twitter support. So if someone can give me some XP boxes with Linux thing in front of it and things like that, then that would be nice. And you know, I'm talking to, you know, hundreds of thousands of hosts. So if anyone has any ideas of how to evaluate, you know, V6 network quality and sort of figure that out from all of these hosts that I'm talking to, then let me know and we'll write some code and figure out how to do it. Okay, how much time do I have?
3 minutes.
3 minutes? What? Oh, I've only got a few slides left. So, TUI. TUI is this thing I started talking about last year. Some bullet points. It's a Twitter relay. It's a 6-to-4 relay. So I'm saying, you know, in my previous slides, I'm saying roll out Twitter and 6-to-4 relays. And now I'm saying use this TUI thing to do it. So you get Twitter 6-to-4 relays. You get a sort of a virtual peering fabric that runs over V4. So by running over V4, you get V4 best paths between places. It doesn't break any existing peering models, anything like that. So if you're someone who, you know, intentionally doesn't peer with people or whatever, it doesn't break any of that. It doesn't give free transit to anyone, any of that sort of stuff. It's very much like Lisp Alt, if you've read about the locator ID splits sort of stuff and so on. It's free, code's free. I actually gave away a bunch of hardware last year to run it. Good and free. So a few people with live boxes. Snap have got one, Costa Clara have got one, and they're advertising a whole bunch of different networks into it. FX Networks have got one, Auckland University have got one, and there's a few other people with hardware that are sort of planning on turning it on, or there's people who have got Cisco boxes who are planning on hooking up to the sort of the virtual peering mesh and that sort of thing. So you can actually hook up to the virtual peering mesh with a Cisco box, or you can do it with the code. It just uses 6-to-4 and it's, you know, fairly simple. There's, you know, 10-ish prefixes on there, which is not that many, but the actual peering exchanges only have 20-ish prefixes, so it's fair. As I said, it's free. I give you the code for free. It's, you know, BSD with Quagga and MyRedo, all open source, whatever. You can run it on VMware. I've got a VMware image. I will send you a, you know, VMX file and a VMDK file, and you boot it up, and away it goes. Or you can run it on any old bare metal x86 box. The stuff that I've been giving to people, it's a Socrates box with a flash card. The code is 16 megs, so it's, you know, hardly anything. You don't need a huge hard drive to run it. You know, find that old 386 you've got somewhere, and it'll boot, and then you go. It needs a V4 BGP session and a V6 BGP session into your network. So Telstra Clear, the way they put it into their network is they put it into basically their sort of test network. And so they've got some BGP running and some V6 running in their test network, so they plugged into that and away to me. Lives on your ASN. It joins your IBGP mesh, so on, so on, so on. And then it does eBGP over 6-to-4. Through a couple of ASNs that I have. One lives at works and one lives at 8. So what it ends up doing is you get routes for all of the other people who are on TUI, be they in New Zealand or overseas. There's a few people who are wanting to put them in overseas in various places. If you have connectivity to 8 or works, I'll drop your routes also onto the 8 and works V6 route servers, So you'll get connectivity to pretty much everyone doing V6 in New Zealand. It doesn't give you IP addresses or anything like that. You have to have your own V6 space from, you know, APNIC or whoever your RIR is. Really quickly, IPdubdubtest is some code that I've talked about a couple of times. It's JavaScript code. When a web page is finished loading, it loads, you know, a whole bunch of different images. They're one by one.